Hey there. Are you tired of waiting for the next episode of It's Probably Not Aliens? Well, we've got some good news for you. On Nebula, our streaming service, you can get access to all our episodes a week early. That's right. You'll never have to wait again to hear Scott and I debunk the latest ancient astronaut theory or get a movie fact wrong. But that's not all. Nebula is home to dozens of content creators we know you like, so you can find all your favorites in one place. Plus, we post content on there that you won't find anywhere else. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and listen to the next episode right after this one.
I don't know of any cold opens. I only know of a hot, steamy open for this one. Because I'm under the weather.
So you have a cold.
I do have a cold open. The cold open is I do have a cold, but my voice sounds very good on microphone.
It's cold make you hot.
Cold makes me hot. You're going to like the way this podcast sounds. I guarantee it.
Can you just say... Before we keep going, can you just say, give me a couple smooth jazz?
Give me a cup of smooth jazz?
Say a couple smooth jazz.
A couple smooth jazz. Give me a couple smooth jazz.
But I just wanted you to say smooth jazz a couple times.
Oh, I thought you wanted me to actually
I should have said a couple smooth jazzes, I guess, would be the
all right. Smooth jazz. Smooth jazz.
There you go.
Is that good?
Yeah.
I was so confused by that whole... At first, I thought you said, give me a cup of smooth jazz.
Give me a cup of smooth jazz.
Which also is funny to say.
Good morning. Have a cup of smooth jazz.
Hey, how you doing, beautiful? How about a cup of smooth jazz?
There you go.
That's like what a radio host would say.
Yeah, you've got like smooth jazz radio host voice right now.
I like
now.
It. Mm-hmm.
And that is great. That's a lot of levity. For
so
the
with that, I hope my voice isn't annoying. There's nothing I can do about it. I really apologize. If there was something I could do, I would. I've had a terrible cough this whole week, and it has done a number on my voice.
The show must go on.
But if it sounds great, then I will try to get sick every week for you, for our listeners.
Just going around, just no more vaccines, just...
no more... this is the first... If our listeners say, Scott, your voice sounds good, suddenly I'm turning into an anti-vaxxer, so I can...
But just for you specifically, you think everyone else should get vaccinated.
But also, just to be clear, not because I don't think they work, but specifically because I do know they work and I don't want their effects. I just want to be sick all the time.
We do not endorse this behavior. Vaccines are good.
Vaccines are great.
Don't intentionally give yourself COVID. That's the worst thing.
No. I did take several COVID tests because I was like, do I finally got it? But no, still in the clear. I think just a cold.
Yeah, you are still a COVID virgin, if I remember correctly.
Never had it.
Damn.
Never will, fingers crossed.
That is intense. That like it feels like during like that Delta wave that like you had to try to not get it.
I know. I'm here and I'm living proof that all of the guidelines can work for people.
You're just pure.
I'm Purell. I'm like 90% Purell at this point.
You washed your hands. You sang happy birthday twice.
Yep.
The trick is you were still sanitizing your groceries and you realized that everyone said it didn't work, but it did. And you were just the one who kept doing it.
It did work for me. It worked for me. And now listen to me. Don't I sound like the picture of health?
So this is all.
Don't I sound like the picture of health, Tristan?
God, now you sound like you've been smoking six packs a day.
All right. So with all of that fun joking out of the way, What's the fun, exciting topic that we're going to talk about on this entertainment podcast about goofing on the show Ancient Aliens?
Well, welcome to It's Probably Not Aliens. We're now what, five episodes deep into Nazis.
We're doing more Nazis.
Yeah, this one is one that I think will be a good topic for like the bigger picture, because this is one of those things that we have talked around but haven't like gotten right to the heart of. We haven't chewed through the sternum and gotten right to the heart of this story. So hopefully this one will go in today. But this is, yeah, this is a podcast called Nazis. Just Nazis.
Yeah, that's right. This podcast is now retitled to just Welp. Here's Nazis again.
Welp, here's Nazis again. Yeah, that's like, it's probably not aliens, colon, Welp, it's Nazis again.
An evergreen subtitle for this podcast. My name is Scott Nicewander. I know nothing except how to exploit my very sickly voice into delicious content for you listeners with your ears. This is ear food right here.
I'm Tristan Johnson. I am the cat that brings you these gifts every week.
The gifts that we do not want.
Yeah, you know what kind of gift it is. Last time my cat did that, though, I was actually happy because he was taken care of. Like, he came, he brought me mice, and I was like, I did not know there were mice in this house. Thank you. Thank you, cat, having it so there aren't. I think that's why we domesticated these damn things in the first place.
Get all the mice out. We don't want them here. They're not paying rent.
That's the reason. But yeah. Okay, so today,
tell me what we're talking about.
Instead of did aliens inspire Nazis, are Nazis aliens? Is the next question.
Oh, interesting.
So this one's going to take a little bit, but basically millions of people around the world who consider themselves either esoteric Nazis or neo-Nazis have this belief that the Aryan people that you know, you might have heard about as being associated with their particular brand of shitheadery is not just that they are, you know, descended from mythical Teutonic people of ancient times or whatever, but that they actually originate from space.
Whoa. Now, this is interesting to me because we have talked about the idea of panspermia, right? Of like, what if all life came from a different place out in space? But this is, what if this specific Aryan race was aliens? And the rest of us were just little gross little plebeians.
Yeah, and one of the kind of holdovers of this today is that there is, in the UFO subculture, one of their sort of rogues gallery of aliens. You know, you have your reptilians and your greys. One of the ones we haven't gotten into is what they call Nordics, which are aliens that look like 8 foot tall, white, blonde haired, blue eyed supermen that are known for being like these kind and perfect creatures that have a origination from the Pleiades cluster. And I mean, like, this whole idea that Aryans came from space has all sorts of interesting ties to the weird connection between Nazis and the occult, or things like lost Aryan civilizations, or like, you know, Atlantis, or all of those.
Yeah.
This is like one of the ideologies that are sort of like at the core of a bunch of these things. So,
yeah, that is interesting that you said they come from the Pleiades cluster.
Yeah.
What? How? Why did I have a lot of questions about that immediately? Because I don't think these are real aliens. But how did they track? How did the people who believe this track it down to like that's where they came from?
Probably because they told them. We come from this well-known constellation.
That's the one. All right, let's get into it.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, but we have to. It's our jobs that we don't get paid for.
Maybe don't get paid. Yeah. Okay. So the idea is that, yeah, Aryans are actually aliens, and that it is that this has to do with the fact that like they have like this pure and supremacy race because they are literally extraterrestrial. This also has sort of manifested in modern ufology with these Nordic aliens that are from the Pleiades. And they, as I mentioned, 6 or 7 feet tall, long blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skin, reminiscent of stereotypical Nordic or Scandinavian people. The first claim, as far as I can tell, though, of the Nordic people doesn't come from a Nazi. So the first claim of a Nordic alien sighting came from the 1950s from a guy named George Adamski, who was a big person in the contactee movement, i.e. people who claim that they met aliens. He is this Polish-American guy, got popular in the 1940s and 50s for ufology. But as far as I could do research, I mean, I could end up being wrong, but as far as my research goes, not a Nazi.
Not a Nazi so far. As far as we know, in the clear.
Yeah, but Adamski did do a bunch of, like, he was in the U.S. Army during World War I for what little bit of it they showed up for. And also was, maybe notable, a fan of science fiction and a novelist.
I see where this is going.
The thing, though, is that he didn't have any, like, link to esoteric Nazism or Nazism in general, but he did have interest in some people like Madame Blavatsky, who I think we have also danced around and will probably have to confront at some part, or the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And so, and this goes along with other claims Adamski made, like in 1952 that he met a person from Venus named Orthon when he was in the California desert. He said he also claimed that he met he had encounters with people from Mars and Saturn. And to some people, he is considered, even UFO investigators don't take him seriously, mostly because, as we all know, Venus is hot enough to melt lead and is a runaway greenhouse effect planet that rains sulfuric acid. And like,
well, that's why they had to go to the California desert, Tristan. Yeah, they had to go to the desert in the hot, hot sun. It's the only place that Orthon could hang out.
Okay. Mars.
I like the idea that Adamski is getting is meeting an alien from every planet like it's a punch card that yeah. he gets. Like, yep, I met someone from Venus. I met Mars, Saturn. I'm all over the place, baby.
Yeah, I think this comes from the fact that, like, in olden times, before we knew that Venus was, like, literally hell, we used to think that Venus's clouds obscured, like, a sort of, you know, steamy, cool planet, usually full of hot women.
Right.
Hot singles in your solar system type thing.
Mm.
Then on top of that, Mars was also, because of a misrepresentation in a very old observation of the surface of Mars, people thought that Mars had life on it. As we know, Mars is a largely barren ball of rust that has what little atmosphere it has is made up of carbon dioxide, and because its core stopped spinning ages ago, it has virtually no magnetosphere, which means that everything on the surface is blasted with radiation. Not exactly the most hospitable place to life today.
You could maybe plant potatoes there.
It's funny, as soon as around the time when The Martian came out, was when the scientific study that showed that because of perchlorates in the soil, he would not have been able to grow potatoes. Almost around the exact time the movie for The Martian came out.
Ah, The Martian debunked.
Yeah.
Finally.
Well, like, the thing is that they didn't know before, but then they found out, it's full of, like, poisonous salt. The other one is Saturn, and I gotta say, Saturn is literally a gas giant. It doesn't have land. So unless this alien was some kind of, like, giant gas bag or something like that, I don't know what this would be.
I mean, have you ever seen the movie Nope?
Nope.
Never mind. No spoilers then.
The only thing I could say that they might be able to make an argument here is that Saturn is, because Jupiter and Saturn, because they're both so big, their moons are basically little solar systems of their own.
Mm.
And Saturn does have moons that, if we think that there is life, they might be on that moon. So maybe they're, my most generous is that this is like a European thing.
Back on track.
Nordic aliens are typically depicted as being benevolent beings that are associated with spiritual growth and love. They're protectors and have concerns about Earth's ecology, which I thought the other nicknames they've been given are tall whites, which sounds like some sort of drink. Get me a tall white.
Yeah. Give me a tall white, please.
Yeah, or a space brother.
A space brother?
Yep. Some have argued that the Nordics in ancient times were referred to as angels. So, you know, in its own ancient aliens thing. And other descriptions that make no sense because they're kind of just garbledygook have said that they're fourth and fifth density beings, which means that they have advanced consciousness and spiritual development. I don't know.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. They're sometimes also called Pleiadians, and that they have a society based on love instead of
instead of money.
Money. Their money is love. I think that's what a bonobo is, too.
Well, it depends. Do these Nordic aliens get it on?
I mean, if Aryans are supposed
to be smooth jazz.
I mean, if aliens are supposed to be, or if Aryans are supposed to be the descendants of aliens, then I guess at some point, yeah.
I guess so.
It's also really key to point out the weird part where they talk about concerns about Earth's ecology, because not that this, like, you know, is 100%, but there is a sort of connection between the Nazis and environmental policies, because the Nazis were some of the first environmental policy makers.
We sort of talked about this a couple episodes ago. That's what got Victor Schauberger interested, or that's what he claimed got him interested in joining the Nazis, was his environmentalism. But you were saying that it wasn't necessarily for the good of the planet, it was more so because,
like, the sanitation of the race type thing.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea is that they established nature preserves, promoted sustainable forestry practice, they did the first laws to, like, curb air pollution, and even the Autobahn highway network was designed to connect Germans with nature. They had a major international conference on animal welfare and had laws put in place to protect animals and the environment. People like Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler and Hermann Göring had an interest in animal welfare and conservation, with Göring even sending violators of animal welfare laws to concentration camps.
Goodness.
But the thing is that you should not take away, or that you should take away from this, and this is why there actually is, like, a whole, like, eco-fascist movement,
mm-hmm.
but that these environmental initiatives are deeply entwined with racist and nationalist ideologies. It was something called blood and soil, a term we might be more familiar with in recent days.
So, okay, so this is, yeah, you're connecting a lot of dots for me here.
Yeah, which emphasize that Germans have a strong connection between themselves and their natural environment, and that their approach to nature conservation is folded into their concepts of racial purity and the expansion over the German state, over whether and that is a bigger ideal than, like, you know, their caring about, you know, the sustainability of the ecosystem or anything like that. Because you can imagine World War II, not great for the environment overall.
No. Not particularly.
No, but it was part of something called the Völkisch movement in Germany, which is this blend of racism and anti-Semitism with nature mysticism and advocating for a return to a simpler nature-connected life. It's sort of like the connective tissue between nationalism and Nazism with, like, the Romantic movement, which was this, like, counter-Enlightenment, like this thing against the Enlightenment in the 19th century of, like, let's not rapidly progress everything forever, but focus more on, like, returning to the land and being more, like, you know, seeing things in more emotional terms and such. And that kind of got roped into nationalism, the idea of, like, the love for your nation. And then the Nazis took it into,
right,
what if all races were in competition with each other? And, like, yeah, it's a really weird and counterintuitive soup of things.
Yeah.
The inspiration, though, for the Nordic alien might actually trace back to the 1951 film The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was a sort of anti-atomic weapons movie.
Oh, yeah. I never saw that one.
So maybe Ancient Aliens is taking, like, these two concepts and smashing them together to make this sort of airy connection. Yeah.
Making them kiss, making these two ideas kiss, making them go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's make the weirdest, grossest baby.
There's a lot of weird, gross babies in this, in the sort of milieu of UFO conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
But it plays into the concept of the Nordic race, which was this idea in the late 19th and early 20th century that promoted that the Nordic race was this superior race of people that influenced Nazi ideology, and began this, with bad archaeology, I should add, this weird search for the Aryan master race that they were all looking for. It got really popular with Scandinavian scholars, which shaped a lot of national identity in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was so popular, and because science is made by people and is necessarily always objective all the time, the idea of Nordic racial superiority got a lot of attention from the scientific community, and a lot of countries got on board with this concept because it also validated their racist policies. And they started to develop this concept of history based on the idea that there were, like, prehistoric migrations of, like, racial compositions and such. I remember learning some of these as if they were facts in school, and it is terrifying.
Oh, no.
You've ever heard of, like, Caucasoid and
no.
maybe okay no okay
don't know what that is.
I'm not gonna say the other ones because they're all really awful terms, but
oh no, are they like slurs?
They That's are no basically good. Yeah, they basically all are slurs about like these are the groups of people, and this was taught to me as if it was facts when I was a kid.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's bad, it's real bad. But like in Norway, this academic discourse led to these different ideological conflicts and caused a resurgence of racial determinism and this idea that there was this Germanic superiority, because like another term for like Scandinavian is often a Germanic, like the Norse religion is often called Germanic sometimes.
Mm.
And Germanic speaking places like North America, Australia, Northwestern and Central Europe started to integrate these ideas with their other ideas like eugenics and theories about race.
Right.
And yeah, they just sort of like, and the Nazis sort of took this idea and pushed it to the extreme and also included like groups like Jews being inferior and basically integrated this concept into virtually every aspect of German life. This was like, this is like the core of Nazi ideology. They called
it
like,
we're getting to the root.
This superior Aryan race had its origins in what were called Proto-Indo-Europeans, who were sort of the common linguistic ancestors of both Europeans and Indians, Northern Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you might sometimes hear about Aryan people in reference to ancient India. And there is some like connective tissue between like the languages of Europe and the languages like languages like Sanskrit. Because there's some connective linguistic tissue between those from what are sometimes now kind of problematically called the Aryan people.
Right.
Not that it's not an inaccurate term. It's just, it's not a, it's just, it has some baggage now. Yeah.
It's got a lot of baggage with it. Yeah.
This is the ideology that rationalized the genocide of perceived inferior groups and created what they called subhumans. So that's sort of the part, the kind of thing that we're delving into. And the other part is that they claim that they're from the Pleiades star cluster, which is also a thing that I think like this is why they use the Pleiades and speaks to another part, which is that the Pleiades has a historical significance in multiple cultures. Sometimes it's called the Seven Sisters or M45. It's located in the constellation of Taurus. It's about 440 light years away from Earth.
Okay.
But even though it's called the Seven Sisters, it actually has over 1,000 stars within it. There's six visible to the naked eye.
I mean, my eye is always naked.
Oh boy.
You can stop me at any moment.
No, that's fine. I'm letting you dig yourself. The name comes from the Greek mythology, where the Pleiades were the daughters of Atlas and Pleione.
Okay.
The seven most prominent stars are named after these mythological figures: Maia, Alcyone, Asterope, Celeno, Taygete.
Every single one of these Electra. Names. Electra's good. Every single one of these names except Electra and Maia, I think is the first one, have the red underline in the Word document that is just like, I don't recognize this word. So yeah. It's going to be hard for us to accurately and confidently pronounce them. But I do know Electra.
Yeah. Also was Greek. Yeah.
Was Greek.
Yeah.
Electra Nachios.
The other one being Merope. The Druids in ancient Ireland and Britain have a tradition called Samhain, which is sort of like the olden Gaelic term for what we kind of call Halloween today.
Ooh.
It's sort of like the sort of fall festival that when it kind of got glommed onto All Saints Day as part of like Christianizing the area, kind of all of that got morphed into what we call Halloween.
Yep.
That time is linked to the Pleiades reaching its highest point in the sky at midnight, which they associated with the thinning veil between the world of the living and the dead.
Ooh.
And various other cultures, indigenous Australians, Chinese people, ancient Chinese culture, Native Americans, Egyptians, Persians, Indians, and Polynesians, because it's a major, feature in the sky, also have parts of the Pleiades and their mythology and folklore that go into various different things.
Gotcha. So this all sort of answers my question at the very start, where I was like, why did they specifically say they were from the Pleiades? It's just because it's a culturally significant
thing
in many cultures.
Yeah, it's a visible landmark on the sky that then they can say, like, because all these cultures all have myths about it, they can say, well, now the Nordic people are obviously associated with all these things.
Latch onto it.
Yeah. Mm. The Pleiades, the Polynesians believed that the Pleiades was a single star that got shattered, which I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool. See, I like, this is like, I know we have to like wade through Nazi stuff, Nazi shit to like get to the cool stuff. But like, I like when we have podcasts that like teach about just like cool cultures and how they saw the world and the stars and things like that. Like that sort of stuff is really interesting to me.
I agree.
It just sucks that it's so often it always just like, and then also Nazis.
Yeah. It's when I started this show, I did not think that it was always going to come back to this. It's weird how often it does. And it has generally informed my entire idea that, you know, all conspiracy theories at some point have their roots in antisemitism. And this sort of makes it very,
very clear.
Yeah. The Pleiades also, though, has been a really useful thing for humans in the past because sailors used to use it to navigate. And very often farmers would use it to manage their calendar. Like the Zuni in New Mexico used to use the location of the Pleiades to determine when it was time for planting and harvesting and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In Japanese culture, the Pleiades are called Subaru, which
the car.
Yep, that's where that's the name comes from.
Are you familiar? I don't know if this is the same in Canada. Are you familiar with the common meme? I guess that Subaru is a car for gay women.
No, I did not know this.
That is like a thing in the States.
The sapphic like, star? Oh, the sapphic
yeah,
car?
Yeah, it'll be like people being like, lesbianism, that's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Maybe this is just the gay planet. Who knows? The Pleiades has been observed since ancient times. The earliest one we have comes from the Bronze Age, which was like 1600 BCE. So like we have, like this has been with humans forever and we've been seeing it many, many times.
Okay. So that was a lot of the claims.
Yeah. That's my extremely excruciatingly detailed breakdown of what they're trying to say.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting about this entire story is that this whole claim that Aryan people came from literal space can be narrowed down to one guy.
Really? It started with one guy.
One guy.
Well, tell me about this guy.
Well, first, we do have to keep the lights on here. So if you will, I need to talk to everybody out here about the good work of product and service.
Okay, yeah.
Have you heard the good news about product and service?
I would love to. We're back. We did it. Tell me about this guy.
Okay. The originator of the idea that Aryans are extraterrestrial beings and also having links to places like Shambhala and Aldebaran is a guy named Miguel Serrano. So
this is the
person where this idea comes from, that ancient aliens cribbed the idea from.
I like the idea that we can just pinpoint it on one guy.
You can pinpoint it on one guy, Miguel Serrano. So let's talk about him. He was a Chilean man. He was a diplomat, a writer. He was also the proponent of something called esoteric Hitlerism.
Oh, no.
Which was this idea that Adolf Hitler was a spiritual and mythological figure with divine or otherworldly connections. He was a fan. He had connections to people like Carl Jung, Hermann Hesse, Ezra Pound, and even the 14th Dalai Lama. So Serrano was, he was, at one point, he was a left-wing journalist. He was really into like Marxism, but then got into, he was even part of a party called Vanguardia Popular Socialista, which was like a sort of left-wing Chilean political party. Then he became disillusioned with communism so hard that he decided to go in the complete opposite direction and develop a philosophy called esoteric Hitlerism.
Oh my God.
So
on the nose.
Yeah. This ideal, this like philosophy was trying to transform modern materialistic individuals into idealistic heroes and is more than just a religion. It's like a way to elevate people that they idolize to the status of gods. So like the idea is that you can philosophically and mythologically turn heroes from the past into gods. And he wrote about this in his 1984 book called Adolf Hitler, The Last Avatar.
No.
Book one, fire. Man, this Netflix remake is looking more and more disappointing all the time.
Yeah, this was problematic, gang.
One might say that that problematic faves are a problem in this one.
There you go. someone might quote that tweet in an article and credit it to me, the one.
The one.
I am the one.
The last avatar. So yeah, avatar being like the real, like the term avatar usually is like the term for a human being that is the embodiment of a god on earth.
Sure.
So Adolf Hitler, the last avatar. Serrano dedicated the book to Hitler.
Well, who else would you dedicate it to?
Yeah.
I mean.
And elaborates that there was a historical conspiracy to conceal the true origins of humanity being from space and such.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to add in like ideas of Gnosticism and various other traditions into this sort of esoteric neo-Gnostic framework. And before that, he wrote another book called El Cordón Dorado, Historialismo Esotérico, which I don't know what cordón means. Let me just check that real quick because I know all the other words. Oh, cordon. So it's like the golden circle esoteric Hitlerism.
Oh.
And this came out in 1978 where he claimed that Hitler was the avatar of Vishnu, who is a Hindu god.
Right.
And was communicating with Hyperborean gods from an underground Antarctic base, which, you know, there's a whole
conspiracy. Hyperborean gods?
So Hyperborea was this term that ancient Greeks used to refer to this mythical far-off land that is Ireland. But has also today been like associated with like, you know, it's like it's actually not Ireland. It's like Atlantis or something. But that these Hyperborean gods were talking to him from an underground base in the Antarctic, in Antarctica, which is based on that whole thing that the Nazis had a secret Antarctica base.
Yep.
And he claimed that there was going to be a time where Hitler would return with a fleet of UFOs and establish the Fourth Reich.
Oh my God.
In this extremely normal set of beliefs, he connected the Aryan race to extraterrestrials, suggesting that the ancient Visigoths, which were sort of like the ancient proto-Germans in olden times, had divine nobility transmitted through extraterrestrial bloodlines.
This guy's kind of got some weird ideas, I'll say it.
He has a couple, yeah, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Another organization that sort of picked this up later was the White Order of Thule, which we'll probably have to get into the Thule Society at another point, but the Thule Society at the point was like a sort of like Nazi occult group. So the White Order of Thule was this group of neo-Nazis who tried to re-emerge into that. Started in the 1990s, founded by Peter Georgia Caracos, Michael Lujan, and Joseph Carrick, and tried to intertwine Nietzschean ideas of the Superman, the Nietzschean Superman, with the idea of Aryan superiority, and try to reject Judeo-Christian religion for a more Greco-Roman right-wing pagan ideology. This is like a thing that is like the two genders of neo-Nazi today, and like they are like there's a legitimate in neo-Nazi circles, there's like this genuine schism that is between the neo-Nazis that are like, we're like hyper-Christian, hate Jews, we have a bunch of shitty opinions, we're white supremacists. And then there's the other ones that are like, Christianity is too Jewish, so we got into like ancient Germanic paganism. And like, this is the kind of reason why you end up with people like the QAnon shaman, who like got into like weird like stuff like this. And these two, they collaborate a lot, but they do have like, they sort of like, they run in different circles, but they're both Nazis. And there is like a sort of like aspect, now not all of hashtag not all pagans, but there is like sort of a part of the neo-pagan movement that is like associated with this kind of stuff. Members of the White Order of Thule were described as a motley crew of eccentric people because they were trying to develop a new form of neo-Nazism that was more intellectual and elitist, that kind of tried to contrast with like the skinhead movement, which again is its own thing, because the skinhead movement started in Britain as sort of like a sort of working class thing. And then Nazis sort of got
into it.
Yeah. I always want to point out, because it's important to point out, that there are groups like SHARP, which is a term for skinheads against racial prejudice. And that like, there are anti-fascist skinheads too.
Wild.
I mean, punk politics in Britain is a whole different thing to talk about. So yeah, they had this focus on trying to rejuice up Greco-Roman culture as part of Aryan superiority, setting them apart from other groups that focus more on Norse mythology. If you think about it, Pleiades aliens would have more association with Greek myths. So
sure.
You'd be surprised though. I love this. I love this line that I found. Despite intellectual pretensions, WOT struggled struggle to attract a large following due to unorthodox views, including, and this you can imagine if you're a Nazi, this being a little bit controversial, having positive things to say about people like Joseph Stalin.
Oh.
Generally, not a person that, you know, right-wing, like Nazism is also a, like, violently, viciously anti-communist ideology.
Right.
So someone like Joseph Stalin, not exactly on the top of their list of people they like.
No.
And, like, you know, generally, the white supremacist movement, fairly right-wing. Right-wing people, famously, not fans of communism.
Don't care for it.
No.
Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah. This group had this weird mix. Like, this group, I'm giving them way too much credit for. They're most of the time, what they did was meet up and have weird meetings. And also, they made a newsletter that nobody read that talked about, like, Aryan spirituality and revolutionary politics. They actually did not, they were against overt violence, but had several members, like Leo Felton, who were involved in crimes like plans to bomb Jewish and Black landmarks in order to start a race war.
You know, I was going to say, it's not so much a bad thing to meet up and have weird meetings and publish newsletters that nobody reads. That's fine. You and I are internet creators. You and I meet up every week to have weird meetings.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily publish a newsletter, but, you know, we publish stuff that maybe people listen to. Who knows? This is not a crime. It's all of the
racism.
Racial stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's all the racism that goes along with it. That's the bad part.
I'm on board. I love weird people. Weird people are great. Racism sucks.
I love having weird meetings. Yeah.
Racism fucking sucks is the thing.
Hot take from Tristan.
Yeah. There. Okay. So to kind of, like, fully flesh this out, the idea that there's also the whole, like, cultural penetration today that the Nazis had these sort of occult connections that they play, that these people are playing into. And it's this narrative that plays along with this extraterrestrial ancestry thing. And it's really been pushed through, like, basically, like, this idea that the Nazis, that the Aryans were from space is another piece in this general thought that the Nazis were secretly or were a lot more into the occult than they actually were, that has a lot of cultural penetration and is not true if you look in, like, the cultural context. Like, there was, like, most Nazis were devout Christians who might have had some side interest in these kinds of things, and some people, like Heinrich Himmler, were a little bit more into it, but it's been grotesquely overstated how influential it actually was in, like, the Nazi party or in, like, their decision making, mostly because it ends up making weird cool things like Hellboy, and, you know, but also I think in a bigger sense it helps us try to explain, I've talked about this before on this show, but, like, try to distance the Nazis from us in, like, the reason that they did the horrible things that they did was not because of our predilection towards authoritarianism and the sort of racist ideas taken to their extreme that were popular in all sorts of countries at the time.
Right.
But it was because they were into this alien evil ideology that that makes them very different and makes the things happening today that are drastically similar. That's different because it's not that. Because it's different because we're not into the occult, and that's what makes them different. And I feel
that's what makes it different.
Yeah, and, like, part of, like, what makes Nazism so terrifying, if you really, like, look at it and understand it, is that how much, like, the Nazis were not that different from us. And that, like, I'm reading this book called Humankind about trying to make the argument that human beings at their core are generally pretty good people.
Yeah.
And that to do something as horrible as what the Nazis did and to be, like, part of the rank and file of such a horrific program of mass killing comes from them weaponizing some of the parts of our minds that make us do the greatest things we do, because, like, it had to do with, like, your connection to each other and your comrades, but also, like, years and years and years of propaganda sort of twisted a bunch of people into these insane ideas that then were really hard to get out of. And it shows that, like, if anything, Nazism and this kind of stuff can show that it takes a lot more work to make us, like, do these horrific things more than, like, we are this sort of idea that this veneer theory that we're all just, like, we're all evil. We're just, like, have the only thing that keeps us from not being evil is a strong and powerful centralized state telling us what to do with police officers. And it turns out if you undo that thinking and realize that left to our own devices, things actually turn out okay for the most part, all of a sudden these centralized states that maybe are the things that that make all the propaganda that lead to people doing things like the Nazi regime.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it's an interesting, like sort of more anarchist-y way of looking at the way human society looks. And it's a good book. I'm not quite finished yet, but it,
No, I like it a lot because I feel like, I mean, I was an edgy teenager on the internet before, and I feel like the general sort of consensus when you're an edgy teenager on the internet is that people suck and everyone's bad and like the world is doomed and everything. But like, as I've gotten older, like there is, you know, I do genuinely believe that like people are like generally good.
Evidence bears that out too, is what I'll say. The thing is that, like, interestingly, the best example to show how something like the Nazi regime can happen and how it's not that, like, far away from, like, society as it is now mm-hmm. comes from this experiment that was done, like, sort of one of the holy grails of social psychology, which was the Milgram experiment, which you've definitely heard of. It's the one where, like, the people told you to shock others and, like, to the point where they're killing people. And, like, the thing is, Milgram's thesis originally was, like, look, all people need is an authority figure to tell them what to do and they will do horrible things. But then you look at the data that was not published, which only started happening recently. And first of all, over 50% of people did not believe that the experiment was real. So like,
yeah,
over 50% of people didn't believe that they were actually doing the electric shocks because I guess the actor wasn't that good.
There are videos of this too. Cause like there have been, when was the original done?
I think it was like in the experiment. 50s or 60s.
Well, I've seen at least videos of potentially repeats of the experiment where there are the people who are participating in it. So if you don't know this experiment, it's sort of just like dish it out in full. You as a person are being told by another person to like increase the electric shocks as like someone's answering questions or something. And if they get it wrong, shock them and keep increasing the power of the electric shocks to the point where you could potentially kill them. No shocks are actually happening.
There's like an actor who's pretending to be shocked.
It's an actor who's pretending, but it was trying to see if how far people go along with it. There are videos of like where you can tell that the person who's supposed to be administering the shocks clearly knows it's not real because they're just like, nope, wrong answer. And just like hits the little switch and like the actor's like, ah, freaking out. And they're like, yep, okay. So the fact that in the initial study, like 50% of the people were like, this isn't real. This can't be real.
But here's the interesting thing. And this is where I think it does say something about human nature and what causes these kinds, like what causes the horrific things in our society is that like the people who believed it, majority of them were like, I'm not doing this. This is horrible.
Right.
But of the minority that did the shocks and believed it was real, they had to be egged on. And what's interesting is of those people, the most successful places were when because they did it in two places. They did it at like a nameless office, and then they also did it at Yale University. People were more likely to do it at Yale University. And they found that the coaxing that got them more likely to keep going with the experiment was lines like, the experiment requires that you continue to do this. And a more qualitative study of the video footage of the people who did this in the original experiment, and this has borne out because they have replicated the study many times, because the effect was larger than people anticipated. Like more people did do the shocking than they actually thought or they expected. But one of the people who did it was a person who had a child with cerebral palsy. And his comments during it were like, I hope that whatever you're doing here will push things forward and make things like to a day where like we can cure this disease for my daughter. And like, there's a lot of people where like, what caused them to do it was by getting them to think that what they were doing, even though it was horrible, was for something better, for the greater good.
Yeah.
In my mind, often like when people do these horrible atrocities, it's because they have done lots and lots of work to convince people of specifically this. And I think that it's when it comes to like Nazi ideology and like these kinds of things, it's really hard for us as a society to grapple with how did millions of people become convinced that committing genocide on a group of people who have done nothing to hurt civilization was like the thing that we needed to do. And oftentimes they thought to prevent the entire collapse of human civilization. And the fact that we can't grapple with that is why like we tried to default back to like, well, it's because they like had alien blood and they were like, you know, they were worshiping the occult and paganism, which often, I mean, you're a former evangelical, right? Like paganism's often associated with like the devil and Satanism and like that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so
it's to the point where it is hard to separate that in my head.
Yeah.
Like that, it was so burned into me growing up that was like, pagan means you're a Satanist. which is not true.
Which, yeah, it mostly just means you like to get naked and dance on solstices. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
But like, so like, that's like the part like that I think of when we talk about like this, like why we lean so hard into like Nazi occultism is because we're trying to find a way to explain how something so horrible can happen without realizing that it's much closer to home than we actually think.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good place to make you, that's enough of a Tristan makes you feel sad thing to kind of get into. But we're going to do another two-parter. There's a lot of juice in this stuff right now, and this is kind of getting to the heart. So next week, I want to go into the sort of educational information part of this show, where I'm going to finally talk about, like, while Nazism and the occult was overblown during the Nazi regime, Nazism and the occult and sort of what we call esoteric Nazism definitely became a big thing after World War II. And that is a big part of understanding the intellectual roots of the UFO movement, but also like the New Age movement, and everything from like your yoga instructor who weirdly got into QAnon a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But a good chunk of it has roots in this, not like Nazis post-World War II falling into weird esoteric mythical stuff. And is supremely influential on like the far right today, but also influences a lot of the ideas that the UFO community got into that then Ancient Aliens, without paying much attention, picks up and starts parroting on a channel that's supposed to be educational for millions of people. So
good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, History Channel. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll pick up on that next time. A good place to follow us for updates is at Probs Not Aliens on Twitter and Blue Sky. Blue Sky's open.
Yep.
Come join us. It's fun times over there.
Yeah.
Tristan, where can people find more of your stuff online if they would like to do that?
Oh, after this, you still want to?
I hope so. Where can we find more of your weird meetings online?
You can find my weird meetings at Step Back on YouTube. If you go to stepbackhistory.com, you can learn more fun stuff. My most recent video then is actually quite apropos of this conversation, because it talks about how the far right and neo-Nazis have latched on to movements like, say, advocating for Palestinians while they're undergoing an ethnic cleansing campaign, and uses that to grow their following to then sneak in the anti-Semitism to their followers. It's been an incredibly eye-opening experience, and I'm really excited to get this video out. I'm going to go and actually write the script after this is done. Scott,
what do you got for me today?
If I wanted to learn about YouTube's shameless plagiarism problem,
if I wanted a
white bald man to tell me about YouTube plagiarism, where would I need to go for that?
You can go right over to H-Bomber Guy, who made a fantastic video that's almost 4 hours long about it. Or you can go watch my video that came out first. Take that, Harris. Came out first a couple months
ago. Come on
the
show and defend yourself.
Come on the show and defend yourself on my YouTube channel, NerdSync, NerdSync. I make videos about fun stuff. I'm actually doing one right now about the Harlem Globetrotters I'm researching. And similar to sort of what we were talking about with like how people try to like pretend that Nazis are like a weird, scary thing that we wouldn't possibly do. The Harlem Globetrotters faced a lot of racism, if you can believe it, from places that you'd think, oh yeah, the deep south in America, of course. I'm like, no, I'm talking like California, you know, like big cities. It's all around us, people. And it wasn't that long ago, segregation and things like that. So I'm talking about Harlem Globetrotters. In relation to Scooby-Doo, I should say. I'm talking about Harlem Globetrotters in relation to Scooby-Doo, but I made it about racism.
That sounds like a NerdSync video, all right?
That sounds like a NerdSync video. So go look forward to that. You could also follow this podcast on nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. That is really the only way right now that we get any sort of financial support for this podcast by people who listen and sign up over there. So that really means a lot to us. As well as, if you don't have the money, leave us a review. That's free. You can do that for free.
A free view.
A free view on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a review based off of this episode, make sure to mention a weird meeting that you had. That's a fun thing. Write it in the review. You can tell your friends about
it. We're going to get a lot of trip reports of people who did shrooms and had some conversations.
That is true. You can tell your friends about the show. I'm losing my voice every single second as I continue to talk. So I will wrap it up. You can follow a great place to send anyone is probsnotaliens.com. It has links to everywhere where you can listen to the show. That will do it.
All right.
So until next time, when I hopefully have a better voice, my name is Scott Nicewander.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. Prediction is going to be probably.
Nope. He hold up a piece of paper to his hand?
Probably.
It is probably.
I think that's like an old Ed Sullivan joke that like no one's going to get.
I got it as soon as, oh my God, I sound so terrible right now.
You're slowly turning into Harvey Fierstein.
I was thinking Natasha Lyonne is who I'm starting to sound like.